Welcome to Dumb Question. I'm your host, Kent McKay, and I know a lot of interesting people. I bring them on, and I ask them dumb questions. In this episode, my continuing chat with Laura and Matt of Obviously Improv. Our fundraiser is coming up April 4th, and tickets are available through a link in the show notes. In this episode, we chat about some of the founding philosophies of Obviously Improv, and we learn something very surprising about Laura. In episode 5 of Dumb Question.
Yeah, and in some ways that brings out your best side. You know, I like a little bit of competition. A little bit of pressure, I think, helps me perform.
It's so interesting. That's like, I was just talking the other day with someone about how that competitive model is like works like that on men.
Yeah.
You know, but not necessarily on women. Do you know what I mean? As a female improviser, like I teach a course called Impro Mama just for female improvisers, and. You know, several of them say to me, oh, you know, thanks for this environment. You know, I just felt so great. And so I explained to them that I intentionally created a safe learning environment for them that where it's okay to screw up. It's okay to fail. Of course, like one of my big things about Keith, he just said in a workshop a couple months ago was, if you're a beginner, be a beginner. What else would you be? And I was like, yeah, that's such good helpful advice. Why would I be an expert baseball player if I played t-ball once when I was a kid? Like, why would I expect that? But then we expect that of ourselves as improvisers. So we were just talking about how the competitive model sometimes drives men forward and sometimes makes women more hesitant to get involved with it. Just in it, obviously speaking, in a larger, I don't know what you would call generalization, I guess.
Yeah, Toronto is not a safe learning environment. No, it's definitely not. But it is exciting. And actually, I'd say, you know, the ratio of men to women is pretty close, actually, out there,
too. Oh, really?
Yeah. I'd say probably better than Calgary if I just look at, you know, performing improvisers on stages.
Yeah.
I would say that the ratio in Toronto is a little more gender parity.
Well, that's why I teach the Improv Mama course, because... Yeah. I just want more women in the scene.
Well, it just makes better improv.
Of course it makes better improv. And it's just like, I just think it should be, we should have stronger female improvisers around to growing, you know? And so that's part of the improv school, which is another thing that Obviously Improv has been putting together this year in co-producing with the Kinkanauts.
Yeah, that was a series of tiered improv classes.
Yeah, so we have like a level A, B, C, D, and then we have one-off courses. Matt's teaching one right now called Improv Supernova, which is...
It's a totally inaccurate name.
Yeah,
Ryan, he's your brother.
Supernova is an explosion, not
It's because when a star collapses in and of itself because it gets too heavy.
So Matt wants to teach us how to break improv, I think is what he
kind
meant.
Of. Yeah, it's the whole point of the course is just to look at short form and long form and smash them together and see what comes out.
Mm. Yeah, so like, or Impro Mama is my course for women. So like we do those levels, but then also throw in maybe wheelhouses of instructors that are around, or maybe the public is asking for a certain like type of thing. Maybe we'll put on a musical course instead of just a one-off, you know, because people are interested in it, stuff like that. So yeah, that's been really cool.
And good attendance, good.
Yeah.
You know, again next year.
Yeah, and you know, from our first bit, we learned about just, you know, like I was saying about artistic directing, we're just, you know, figuring it out as we go. So we learned how to market a little bit better and learned how to respond to the needs of the people who want to take the classes and tailor that to what the need is in the city. And so it's been great, and yeah, we're gonna keep going.
And it's cool because it trains improv fundamentals before you specialize in long form or short form. Is how does the school set up?
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, you can go through those levels and then you can kind of specialize within that if you want, or go go both ways. A lot of people signed up for level A, B, C, D, and Impro Mama. You know, they're just like super hungry for learning. So we wanted to fill that niche.
I remember those days. when I first took improv in 2011, I did that. I took every course I could possibly get access to. I tried putting a wig on to get into the women-only class, and that did not fly.
No, I can tell.
The beard.
Yeah.
But you know what's crazy, though?
And that I know you.
And
those are the two things.
Is that Laura, don't judge!
Laura and I came up without improv classes. Like.
Yeah, totally.
We did. We never had... when we were first starting out as improvisers in Calgary, there was kind of the Moose, but that was even during the hiatus time, I think, even, like, because they had a break when they did 2 years without shows. I think that might even have been about the same time when we were actually, like, starting with improv. And
well, the process, like, I did go around to the Moose when I was a teenager, and
I remember
the process. Yeah, the process was just like, yeah, come around for a long time and, you know, we'll see, right? And so after a while I was like, oh, I'm just mostly selling popcorn. And so then I met Rick from the Guild, and he basically gave me, he and Dave Duncan gave me free, personalized, like, one-on-one coaching, put me in shows pretty much immediately with, like, these, like, improv guys that have been doing it for like three decades.
Yeah, I walked in, through Laura, I got to guest on an Improv Guild show. I just guested one time, and Rick's like, yeah, come down. He'd never seen me before, threw me on stage. I learned games on the stage. That's how I learned most of the games I play. I learned them on stage. Like, I never workshopped them once. I did it for the first time in front of an audience, and then we did, then later on we maybe talk about it. We're like, oh, this is how this works. Like, Laura and I did that way. But then, we got this crazy intense, like, coaching, because once I stepped on the stage, I just kept getting booked for two weeks.
It was really cool, like, because I'm a teacher, I think about times that I've learned something and then I try to replicate those experiences for my kids. Like, when you're learning to drive, if you have somebody who's in your passenger seat who's like, oh my God, put your foot on, no, watch out, then you, like, you stress, and it's like it's a really not a pleasant experience, right?
I taught Laura how to drive. That was me.
But if they're like, and now put your foot on the pedal, you got this, everything's okay, then you're calm and you learn better, right? And the thing about doing that with Rick and Dave is, like, they totally believed in me way before I believed in myself.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I was just like, are you sure you want me to be in your show? You know, I don't know how to do this, right? And they're like, yeah, you'll be fine. We got you.
Yeah, I got that email.
Yeah.
I did the first Fringe after taking one improv course. I did 4 weeks of improv, and then I was in the Fringe that year. And I was like, hello? it was being tossed into the deep water, basically.
But you have to.
With your water wings.
Yeah, I was just playing the guitar and separate drinking fountains. And
separate drinking fountains. That's the way
Heather described it.
Oh my God!
When I first went into the thing, I thought I'm going to be improvising with everyone else.
Yeah.
And playing the guitar, and then I asked Rick, and I'm like, how is this going to work? Like, I'm just starting out here. Like, I can do some of the stuff, okay, but I can't do all. He's like, no, you're just playing the guitar and watching. I'm like, okay. Yeah. And it's literally like, I was on one side playing my guitar, and everyone else, and Heather's like, it's like you got a separate drinking fountain.
Oh my gosh.
But which, like, I kind of requested that because I didn't want, like,
requested your own drinking fountain?
Yeah, a separate drinking fountain. Because,
so
I went into it and I invited my friends thinking that I was going to be playing improv.
There's moments when you're, I think, thrown in above your head, and you're like, I do not know what I'm doing. Some of the first time I played long form shows, I did not know what I was doing. I'm like, I've been performing improv for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, but I have no idea what is going on right now. You know, but those are the moments when you're just like, the learning curve is so huge, right? You know, you're not succeeding, you're failing over and over again, which is so wonderful that you can do on stage with improv. And the learning that comes out of those moments is huge, just huge.
Yeah. We've been, Matt does improv residencies with schools, so he came into my school, and the kids thought it was so ridiculous that Matt was telling them to embrace failure, and that he's like, I want each and every one of you to be a failure. Like, they thought that was ridiculous, and they told me, they're like, Mrs. Tinesco, get a load of this guy. This is what he said. I'm like, yeah, I support that. I agree with it. They were like, oh, what? Really? I'm like, yeah.
You are going to think this is hilarious.
Yeah.
And then she's like, no.
No, that's a core philosophy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I strongly believe in that, too.
It's interesting when you think about the education philosophy is about not failing. you know, and that's a lot of where Keith's work came from.
Yeah.
It was about getting stuff right.
Yeah, because you know? Because the Western education basically ruins you.
Yeah.
And turns you into someone who can function in the
bureaucracy.
In the bureaucracy of the Western world. And that does not reward failure. And have you ever noticed, like, when, like, you see someone make a mistake, like somebody driving, and they move over to the lane a little bit, or they park stupid.
Yeah.
They're not just, oh, they made a mistake. It's that guy's a acting a-hole, right? Mm-hmm. It's like there's no line between a regular human being and a complete screw up. There's no degrees of mistake. It's you either a complete write off or you're okay.
Well, Keith will say stuff like the third scene of the night should be bad.
That's why I show up.
You're in the third scene. After guitar, they were like, now Kent, we want you in the third scene only.
You open the oven up, and the third scene comes in, and I make the questionable scene judgment, and then I go back in the box, and the rest of the show can proceed.
Or like to the sound improviser, he would say, if you didn't make three mistakes tonight, you weren't working hard enough. You know,
you gotta be trying stuff.
Totally, like you're taking risks.
Yeah.
If you don't take the risks, you're never going to hone your craft.
Of course,
right?
In any artistic practice.
Yeah.
And if you're improvising, you cannot predict what comes next, so you can't.
And you need the energy of the show. Like our hip hopera that we did great in our rehearsal didn't have the feedback from an audience, right? Like you don't know what a thing is going to be like until the audience is right there with you. And so when you're in the moment on the fly, sound improvising or lighting improvising, if you're not trying things in front of an audience with feedback without the possibility of stopping, you just have to deal with what happened, then you're propelling yourself forward. I think it's super important. Mm.
Yeah, it's one of the most important things you can do. And doing it on stage is a whole nother level.
You know, doing it. See? I'm one of the guys. I made a doing it joke.
Uh-oh, good joke.
Doing it.
Yeah, it was kind of a
good
joke. Kind of.
She called it a doing it. She didn't let a doing it go by without being called.
Yeah, right?
So
yeah.
You're doing it.
So this kind of brings up a question more for myself. Because when you guys started, there wasn't, as you said, there wasn't so much improv schools. But there was the Moose, but it was hard to get into. So the people who were doing improv weren't necessarily trained improvisers. So you guys learned on the fly. And now there are people who have been doing improv for 10 years in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Who come out of high school have done improv. And a lot of improv shows are stocked with people who are exclusively trained in improv. So is there room for dilettantes in the improv community?
Because there's room for everyone. You know, that's the cool thing about it. Ultimately, what you do on stage, it doesn't matter what your training is. Some people have really amazing instincts really early on. There's people that just step on an improv stage and get it. And it's not because of training, it's just because of the specific makeup of their brain and their life says, I can do this.
Well, there's a lot of options in Calgary right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of options in Calgary.
The community's never been healthier. There is a real community in Calgary now. There's places that specialize in different things. There's connections. There's options.
Yeah, I'm a part of like four groups right now, and
I don't even live here, and I'm a part of like three or four groups. That's how possible it is.
I wanted to do the math. Like, how many active improvisers do you think are in Calgary?
Oh, I've done this.
200.
Well, I was
active, maybe 150.
I'd say 100.
100.
Yeah, 100. I'd say about 100.
Active improvisers.
That's my estimation.
Yeah,
and that includes like 40 people who don't perform very often.
So that means we can form one group of 100. Then how many groups of 99? Add it up, because this is so much. I call it cross-pollinization. It's like, I'm going to go play with you. We clearly have trained in different styles or we have different attitudes, but I see something in you that I want to play with.
Yeah.
And forming new groups like Giggle Duck, and which, on you know, I was a crazy show with Andrea and Christine. Like, which would not have existed without that kind of...
Well, like, this whole like, big thing since Improv came on the scene, and how, like, when those players left the Guild and came out and started exploring, you know, the different possibilities in Calgary and started developing relationships between the companies, it started to create, like I don't think that Andrea and Christine would have been producing their own show if people weren't encouraging them, hey, do what you want, make your own opportunities, you know.
Here's a space you can rent.
Yeah.
That's the Calgary thing, you know. it's got an entrepreneurial spirit. People just do it. If you've got a good idea, people will support you. Other people, other Calgarians. You know, it's got that, if you work hard and you've got a good idea, Calgary wants it to succeed. And that's what I love about the city. And the same thing is reflected in the improv community. People with ideas for shows that want to work hard and promote it and produce it are going to have some success. Because not just fellow improvisers, but other Calgarians will kind of pick up on that.
But they're also going to have failures.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Exactly.
Right? Because while classes are awesome, like I was saying before, unless you have those opportunities for performance where you have that audience feedback loop and you start feeling like, oh, that's what happens when, like, that's how I feel when a scene goes terribly wrong. Here were the incidental things that made it happen. I would like to avoid that feeling in the future, you know, right?
Yeah.
And that's how we are trained.
And timing. You get your timing from an audience. You can't learn that in a classroom scenario. You know, it's so important, right? And you only get the feedback when the audience is there. You're like, oh, I said that line too early. You pause half a second, you deliver that line, and suddenly it's funny no matter what you said, just because of the sheer timing.
Yeah.
And you,
totally.
Little things like that, those are skills you can only develop in front of an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, opportunities for performance are amazing. And now that this city has more and more of those popping up. And I encourage everyone who's sort of just to do it, just to get yourselves on stage.
Calgary Improv School has an optional performance designed into the end of each class. So because of that philosophy, like, I think it's really important. You can't just learn it in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And so just to be like, hey, you guys, this class is, you know, level A and level C just finished. You guys are going to put together, you guys have 15 minutes, you guys have 15 minutes. And then the instructors do a bit together just to keep it, to have something different for us too to do as instructors together. And the last one we did was a total riot. It was a total riot. Me and Ryan Sheedy did one. It was called, oh my gosh, Deep and Visceral or something like that. Real and Visceral.
So it's a cool up, you know, the Calgary Improv School, and is another vehicle to get on stage.
Yes.
When you're on stage, you're honing your skills, you know, and you're discovering what it is to perform. You can become, you know, you can understand what it is to improvise in class, but to perform is a different thing, and the two are linked. So that's, yeah. So get on stage, do it. Find a way. Produce a show yourself. It's not as hard as you think.
It might not be successful.
It probably won't be. But that's okay. You'll learn.
Yeah.
Embrace your failure.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I recommend improv classes to pretty much everyone I meet.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, I can't speak in public. Take an improv class.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you have a hard time writing. Take an improv class. Like, after doing a couple of years of improv.
My wife's cheating on me.
Take an improv
class.
Maybe you'll meet a nice girl.
Maybe meet some people. Because, like, you know, you do a year of improv, and after you've experienced, like, in an improv scene, being eaten by a bear and attacked by various forest creatures and this type of things. When you go out in the street, like, you've experienced
what can happen.
It's like,
well, a lot of people have said in the courses that they, like, I always ask them why they're here. Like, what are they working on? What's going on for them that they signed up for this improv class? And, you know, there's always a few that say, I'm here to meet people. I'm here to have friends, like, and have this other environment. Like, I hate my job. You know, soul sucking all day long, and then I just come here and I can be.
Yeah, improv classes is the complete opposite to most people's job experience.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys work in the arts and maybe do improv maybe for a paycheck. When you, most office environments do not appreciate a really good word at a time. That ruins most board meetings.
And you've tried.
All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, okay, we're going to start the meeting now. We'll have a word at a time around the table.
We're going to go through the agenda and approve the minutes one word at a time.
We're doing it as a last letter, first
second
letter.
That motion.
It just goes on unappreciated. They do like a yes, let's attitude. That seems to go far in a in a work
environment. As long as they're generating all the ideas and you're the one saying yes.
Yes. So you have to do the, we could do this, but that would never work.
Yeah.
And then that gives them the opportunity to go to one and admonish you for saying it wouldn't work and take the idea for themselves. So it's a good.
Well, improv teaches you to be able to engineer that if you need to. You can make someone think it's their idea or support or offer something, then let go of it and then get on board with their idea and make it seem like you never offered something in the first place.
That's what women do with men all the time.
Yeah, the whole reason I started this podcast is because Laura said not to.
That's right. He thinks it's his idea.
That's nice.
It's not true.
No.
False. That was a false.
Though your brother, when I told him about the idea, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this podcast. He's like, nah. He compared it to like a ice toboggan or a concrete toboggan or something. It's a metaphor for like a great idea that you'll never actually do.
Oh. Okay. Well, here you are doing it.
Well, where's he?
In your face. Ryan.
He's stuck in Toronto. That's
yeah. Where he is. He's probably playing video games right now.
Probably it's Sunday.
It's good. So you're a teacher. Did you always want to be a teacher?
Well, as a child, I went through a few little. Like ballerina was high up on the list. Lawyer for a little bit, just maybe like a year or two. Forensic scientist was up there for a long while.
I didn't know that.
Really?
I've known Laura a long time. I've known Laura since...
I think it's because in grade six, they teach you about forensic science. Mm. And I was like, yeah. Fingerprints, solving crimes.
You know, I had a fingerprint kit when I was a kid.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah. So it's totally
you
cool.
You did. Yeah, that's what you did.
Yeah, exactly.
I read a lot of Encyclopedia Brown.
Yeah.
Yep. No, that may have sounded sarcastic. I read a lot of
them. So did I. Yeah.
Child detective.
Put the money on the barrel head.
Yeah.
Yeah, child
the
detective.
The great brain.
So good.
Cam Jansen. She had a photographic memory. Mm-hmm. But I don't have a visual imagination. So.
Oh, yeah. Explain this. This is just going to tell people about this. I love talking about this.
If anyone listens to this podcast, they're going to freak out right now.
Yeah, this is weird.
So I don't have a visual... I named it a visual imagination because there's no way to say it. If you have one, you think everyone thinks that way. So I can't see pictures in my mind like people can. Like, imagine an apple. I can think, well, it would be red and it would be round and it would be sitting on a table, but I can't see it.
She can't picture an apple in her head. Isn't that funny? You can picture an apple in your head.
Yeah.
Because everyone can.
I can think. You can be like, oh, now it's green. And I'll be like, okay, it would be green.
You picture words? Like when you're like.
No, nothing. I have no visual.
So if someone tells you to spell a word, what do you do?
Well, I can still think.
But you just have to remember.
I've been having this conversation this whole time.
You don't like see the letter spelled out in your brain as you say what a word
is. No. So like things like visual spatial things are really hard for me. Like hanging a painting on a wall
because you can't.
I don't know why. I don't know if those two things are connected, but I feel like or like for example, I have a blank canvas and I want to paint something. I have a very hard time generating what to paint. If I copy, like if I say I would like to paint this mug, then I can paint and actually quite fairly well.
I can
paint, but. I can't, like, decide visual spatially what I want. And I think that's related to not being able to imagine. Like, when people say, picture this, I had no idea that people could actually get a picture.
You just thought it was, like, a turn of phrase.
Yeah. Or, like, visualization when you're, like visualization is about seeing.
Memories, like, things you have seen in the past?
I don't have a picture of memories, but I have memories. Or, like, a dream. I can remember my dream, but it's, like, black. There's no...
You remember the events of it? I remember the narrative?
And, like, I can remember what it looked like, but I don't have a picture of it.
You could describe it, but you don't have a picture in your brain.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Do you think that, like, affects your improv in any way?
Maybe.
It doesn't seem to hinder
I'm super imaginative as like a... I'm a creative person.
You're very playful, all those things, yeah.
Yeah, like I don't think it stops me from creating things.
But it would definitely keep you in the moment because it would keep you from like... Because often when I start a scene and we're given an environment, I'll start mentally painting where things are. So I know where the clock is and I know where the table is.
What do you mean? Like you can see
like
it in
I'm
your
standing,
mind?
I'm standing in the mind and when I'm on the stage and I can see the office in my mind. I know the light's coming through the window. When someone says go to the typewriter, I have an idea where the typewriter is already.
Yeah. Like I have if that's where the desk was, the typewriter would be on it.
Yeah.
But I don't have a picture of it in my head.
Yeah, no. When there's like a kitchen, there's cupboards, I have the picture of them in my head when I'm improvising, so I go over to where I picture the sink to be.
So mime is probably the mime. That probably impacts it.
But specificity.
You definitely keep you in the moment because you couldn't, when somebody else says something that breaks that, the learning tricks you have to, beginning for improvisers have to learn is to get rid of that idea that you've already pictured.
Yeah,
you
yeah
don't have to, you don't have to do that because you didn't picture it to begin with.
Oh, that's interesting.
Maybe.
Maybe that you like micro second.
Yeah. Like, the best way I came up with to explain to somebody was like, if you went into your room and the lights, it was pitch black in your room.
Yeah.
It's like, you know your bed's there and it looks like that, but you can't see it. That's what it's like for me. It's like it would have flowers on it because my bedspread has flowers on
it. Okay, I've got pretty good night vision.
Well, the thing is, it's not even a good like way to explain it because probably what you would do is actually have a picture of your room with the lights on in your mind.
Yeah, that's what I find.
While that happened.
Yeah. Well, it's like when you lose something, you go back in your mind. It's like, well, I went here. Oh, I remember seeing them on the calendar.
Do you ever do that? You go, you can't do that.
Yeah, I have memories. I just can't see them.
So you're like, okay, I walked in the door.
I left my credit card over there.
So just like, not even words coming up. Just like, I know I walked in the door. I know I put my things on the table, but you can't see yourself like, okay, when I came in, this is what I did.
Yeah.
I went over here.
And I felt super
down there.
Ripped off when I found out that people could do that.
Oh.
I was like, what? And then they were looking at me like I was crazy. I'm like, wait a minute. So like, and then I remember I had this like super long conversation with my family where I was like, okay, like imagine we're sword fighting. Do you see a sword in your hand? And they're like, yeah.
You,
and I'm like,
you can.
What?
You can.
See one? Are you hallucinating? Like, you see one in your hand? He's like, well, I see a picture of myself holding the sword in my hand. And I'm like, what?
Wow.
I'm just like,
yeah.
Hold my arm out.
Oh, yeah, like when you're doing mime sword fight on stage.
Yeah.
Like, this is what someone holding a sword would do.
Yeah.
Not, I'm actually, oh my God, that's so funny.
I can't believe it. I feel really ripped off.
Well, yeah, it's like finding out, it's like, movies are in color? The whole time, not knowing.
Well, you know, that's how kids, like, I use that sometimes as how kids feel. Like, imagine if you found out that you're, like, dyslexic or something, and you're like, wait a minute, reading isn't this hard for everyone?
Yeah.
Just me?
Well, imagine, like, that's how blind people's memories would be. Like, they would have no mental image of...
Yeah, unless they had sight and lost it. But then they would at least have that visual imagination thing.
Yeah. But if they were born blind,
I don't know. I guess
it's kind of like you were born blind.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's like I was born blind.
Brain blind.
It's just black. It's just black. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's my life.
So what can't you do?
Yeah. What are your handicaps?
Hey, double jointed?
No.
No, can you?
This is another thing.
I can't roll my R's. I can't roll my R's.
Here's something else that's connected with all that. So, like, people store their memories in different places in their brains as well, and they also store time differently in their brains. So, like, if you want to know, like, for example, if you ask me what, like, oh, the wedding is in July. For me, my brain goes, like, in the top left-hand corner, it's January. But, of course, I see none of this. But I just think about it. January, and then as we go right, February, March, April, May, June, July. And then it's another row.
Okay.
So, like, August is in the bottom left. September, October, November, December. So, or if I'm thinking backwards, like, oh, that thing happened in December, I think of, like, the bottom right.
Okay, That a lot of people have that kind of thing, like the past is over here.
Or yeah, exactly. Or like people flip through a calendar. Oh, it's in July, and then so they flip January, February, March, April till July comes up. Or some people do it as a clock. Like 6 months in is June, so like 6 o'clock is June.
That seems right, Peter Pan or something.
What do you guys do for your calendar?
I don't know.
Like, just think in August, you're going to be in Calgary again.
See, I'm pretty visual. Like, I have a big full-year calendar by my desk at work.
Yeah.
And you just see the whole year all at once. And then I pretty much whatever calendar I have that up on, I'd be like, okay, you said July. I'm like, okay, that's whatever quadrant that would be on that one.
I think it's linear for me. It's, like, left to right, probably. Just January 1.
Like a timeline.
Yeah.
Probably.
Or if you think of something that
sometimes
happened in November, where do you go to? Like 3/4 of the way down the line?
Well, it's close to my birthday, so.
So what, you see pictures of like your birthday?
On November? Yeah, if someone said November, I'll picture like cold. Probably, yeah, my birthday.
Some people see like a window with the seasons out of it. Yeah.
I can ask people this.
I can, it's fun, dude. Now I just want to think of all these cool things I could do that you can't.
I know, I can still think of seasons. I just can't. I'm in my mind.
You think this is connected with you not liking music?
I don't know. Although I did hear that not liking music is, there was like, I heard that they did a study where they lit up people's minds, or sorry, they focused on people's brains, and then different parts of the brains lit up when music was playing. And for like, whatever it was, 90% of the people, they had all this emotional, all these emotional parts of their brains were triggered. And then in like 10% of people, or maybe it was less, I don't know what the statistic was, it didn't. And so it was just like, yeah, that's a thing. Like, the color green's a thing, and golfing's a thing. You know, like, yeah, it's around.
It doesn't move them emotionally or...
Yeah, but most people are, like, it's intense about music, right? Because it has such a huge impact on them. And then for other people, it's just like... And I've always been like, why are people so upset about that? Like, you cannot like basketball.
Have you never cried at a song before?
Oh, yeah. I like some songs. Yeah. And I like some styles of music.
You're not a cold emotionless robot after all.
But, like, I don't have an iPod. I don't... The only reason I download music is for my improv shows or, like, shows that I write that I have to do the sound design for. I'll go and find music for that. But I don't... Like, I have a CD player, like a ghetto blaster, and I put it...
I don't know if you're allowed to say that anymore.
Yeah, I have a racist box that I put in my room, and like, just the other day, I was cleaning out my, like, classroom at school, and I was like, oh, I'm going to be there for 8 hours doing nothing. I probably should bring some music. That would be a good opportunity to listen to music, because I just don't listen to music. And then I was like, oh, I'm going to have to, like, bring this ghetto blaster to school. And then I was like, it was too annoying.
Urban sound generator?
What? Boombox?
Boombox.
CD player.
Man, you just dated yourself. CD player.
Seriously, it's from my childhood, the CD player.
I remember the one.
I also have a Discman in my car. because when I go to the dentist, I don't like to listen. I can't stand
so
the scraping.
So you bring a Discman?
Yeah.
Into your dentist's office? A Discman?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's okay. I'm just like, hey, dental hygienist, bitch. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to put this in. You don't talk to me. You get it done as soon as possible.
I'm going to put the skip resistance on, and you have to
do. You can just plug earphones into your phone, which is already also an iPod.
But then you have to have downloaded music for that.
It's so... Okay, sorry. I have the same reaction every time. I still can't believe it.
I have, like, a sound design. I have sound design stuff on here, so I can put out, like... Like, one time, I went... Karina left her the show iPod at my house.
Yeah.
And I decided I would go for a run, and I would listen to music. Two things I don't do.
Yeah.
So I put the iPod in my ears, and I'm like, I'm going for a run. And it's like, okay, music, it's a tune, it's good. And then all of a sudden, and it would be like drip, like a sound effect, and then it was just on like random or whatever. It was super funny.
I found it oddly motivating.
Yeah.
Drip,
yeah.
Run, drip, yeah. Run.
Sometimes I hear a shotgun, I just run. I just run.
An elephant? Oh no!
They actually have that. You can download thing. It's a zombie.
Yeah, the zombie running.
It's zombie running. So it's like a 3D sound effect thing of like zombies coming after you just to motivate you to...
That's crazy, man.
It's fun.
It's crazy.
So on that note, the show is April
4th. The fundraiser?
Yes.
Yeah. Improv Games, Catching Funds. You can buy tickets online. Improvgames.bpt.me.
Yeah, and Fresh Notes is coming up at the end of the month. That's March 26th to 29th. And just go to notimprov.com/festival to find out all the info about that one.
Sweet. So that's a good bunch of shows coming up next month.
This is going to be pretty rad.
March and into early April, so much amazing improv in this city.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming out, guys.
Thanks for podcasting us.
No problem.
Yeah.
For more dumb question, go to standupcomic.ca.